for the first time, we're going to have show and tell. I was hoping Norm was going to be here for this because he's a carpenter. I actually used to use plumb lines in my younger days when I did carpentry work. But this is a plumb line. And we're going to do a teaching from Amos chapter 7. Now, Amos is one of the minor prophets. There's 12 minor prophets. They're all in the same scroll. They're called the 12. And Amos preached to the northern kingdom of Israel and warned them, as we're going to see, what was going to happen. And what was going to happen was that the northern kingdom was going to be destroyed by the Assyrians. And some of the people were going to be taken into exile. The Assyrians were moving into the northern kingdom, and they became the ancestors of the Samaritans. Ah, here's Norm. Look, Norm, I got a plumb line. I was hoping you were going to be here to talk about plumb lines. We're going to lay some blocks. Yeah. And so why are we talking about a plumb line? So if you have your Bible, you can go to Amos chapter 7. And maybe this will work at some point. No, oh, there we go. So what is a plumb line? What does it do? As Norm just mentioned, you can make a wall. The plumb line's used for measuring the vertical. And this is an ancient tool. I mean, we're talking, the Northern Kingdom fell in 722 B.C., so God and Amos were already familiar with plumb lines, and I'm sure the Egyptians long before that had plumb lines, because it makes sense that you got a heavy thing and gravity pulls it down and makes the string straight. And so you use it to make the perpendicular, to make the true perpendicular. To make the true perpendicular. The string shows you the 90 degrees. So when you're making a block wall, brick wall, you got the bricklayers would have the line there and they'd put it right up to the line. And it would be straight. So Amos, minor prophet, this is just before 722 BC, just before the whole northern kingdom is going to be trashed. And why was the northern kingdom trashed? Idolatry. And what did God do to the northern kingdom? Utterly destroyed it. Utterly destroyed. There wasn't anything left of it. The tribes were lost. The buildings were gone. The idolatry was gone. The people were gone. Total judgment. Oh, God wouldn't judge his own people. Well, guess what? He did. Twice. He destroyed his own house twice. And, you know, we have people in the church now saying, oh, well, you know, he's not going to judge the church because, you know, we're the church. You know, we're so awesome. He wouldn't. Well, guess what? He destroyed his own house twice. When he destroyed the southern kingdom, the people were saying, oh, man, we don't have to worry. We got the temple here. We got all the scrolls. We got all the priests. We got all the stuff. There wasn't anything left of the place. And all the people were carried off. So Amos 7:7. Thus he showed me, behold, the Lord stood on a wall made with a plumb line, with a plumb line in his hand. And the Lord said to me, Amos, what do you see? Now look, the Lord made the wall with a plumb line. So what that means is the wall was good. When he made the wall was straight. The wall was perpendicular. He decreed his law. He made the covenant with the people. The wall was perfect. Now he's standing on the wall with the plumb line. And he asks Amos, what do you see? He asks him what he sees. If you remember in Jeremiah chapter 1, we did this two, 3 years ago, and we're going to do it again because, you know, he shows Jeremiah an almond branch. He says, Jeremiah, what do you see? He says, an almond branch. God says, that's right. It's an olive branch. And that means judgment is coming fast. The almond tree blossoms and makes its fruit before all the other trees. So when he says, you see this olive or this almond tree? Judgment's coming soon. Then he saw this boiling pot that was coming from the north. And he says, hey, Jeremiah, what do you see now? He says, I see a boiling pot coming from the north. God says, very good. The judgment's going to come from the north. And that's where the Babylonians came from. They had warning after warning after warning. If you've read Jonathan Cahn's books, the first Harbinger was very much about the northern kingdom of Israel. Harbinger 2 is about the northern kingdom and the southern kingdom. There's a judgment. There's a period of waiting. Nobody repents. There's another judgment. There's a period of waiting. Nobody repents. Judgment comes. In fact, at the southern kingdom, there's a 19-year period of judgment, of waiting. 19 years. He says the first harbinger was 9/11, 2001. So if we follow the same pattern and you add 19 years to 2001, what do you get to? 2020. So far, this has been a year of judgment. And there's more to come. So just like Jeremiah. So God's going to make a point. What is this thing? It's a plumb line. Very good. Now let me tell you what that means. I made a wall with a plumb line. And boy, look at the wall used to be really straight. Here it is after I made it. And look at that. Plumb line's perfect. Everything's plumb. Other direction, everything's level. I'm sure they had levels in those days too, because that's a pretty simple concept. So I made everything really good, very well. So Amos answers, it's a plumb line. Then the Lord said, behold, I am setting a plumb line in the midst of my people Israel. I will not pass them by anymore. Time is up, bub. Well, he doesn't say bub. But it says, time is up. I got the plumb line in my hand. Let's take a look at the wall now. Is this the same wall that I built? Is the wall as intact as it was? Is it as straight as it was? Is it the perfect perpendicular anymore? The wall's starting to crumble. The wall's starting to bulge, the wall starting to fall, I can't overlook it anymore. You know, in the book of Galatians, I think it's chapter 6, Paul writes, God is not mocked. There's a period of time where accounts are settled. He's not mocked. It's not like, oh, he's not going to care about that. He's not going to care about that. Like we are people today. Oh, come on. That was written 3,000 years ago. He can't possibly still think that. No, come on. That stuff was written for primitive people. We're all advanced now. We got computers. We'll decide who's going to be born, and we'll decide who's going to be married, and we'll decide this and that and the other thing. Because after all, the truth can't still be the truth. And if God hasn't got, I'm sure he's gotten over that, but if he hasn't, well, he's going to have to get over it. Plus, who cares what he thinks anyway? Well, he's not mocked. COVID is here. There's no sign that COVID is under control. It's getting worse, and it's going to get worse. And then the next thing's going to come. This is just the beginning. These are the birth pangs that Jesus told us about. So I'm not going to pass them by anymore. The high places of Isaac shall be desolate, and the sanctuaries of Israel shall be laid waste. I will rise with the sword against the house of Jeroboam. We're not going to get into all the historical context of this. The northern kingdom is going to be laid waste. Jeroboam was a rebel. He led people to set up two separate kingdoms after Solomon died. The high places are going to be desolate. The sanctuaries are going to be laid waste. I'm coming with the sword. The sanctuaries are going to be laid waste. I'll destroy my own buildings, and I'll destroy the false buildings. You want to make temples to different gods? Well, they're all going to be trashed. And because you've made them, you're all going to be trashed. It's a jealous God doesn't put up with idolatry. Doesn't put up with images of gods that, quote, compete with him. So the plumb line keeps the vertical, keeps the true perpendicular. Israel was the wall. Israel was built perfectly with the law. It was the perfect covenant. The line showed it was perfectly perpendicular. And I'm sure it was level too. But it was perfectly perpendicular. Israel was the wall. Was she straight now? You know, this is the time of Ahab, Jezebel, every evil king. Almost all the kings, all the kings of the north were basically evil. The wall wasn't straight anymore. The kings married pagan wives and said, oh, would you like a temple for your gods too? Oh, sure, honey, I would. Oh, no problem. And they built them on the high places. God says, don't build worship things on high places, because that's what the pagans do. So they built temples on high places. So was the wall that he built straight? He had made the wall true, and it was exact, and it was solid, it was well ordered, and his law kept it perfectly. The covenant was the law. If you follow my law, the wall's straight. If you don't, it starts to not be straight. So he's going to address this. He was the foundation of all of this. Now he's going to check it with the plumb line. I wasn't around in the 80s, I was around, but I wasn't a believer then. The last thing on my mind would have been going to a church. But at a church that we go to, there was a famous incident. There was a special Sunday morning where they belonged to a major denomination. The denomination had gotten more and more liberal as time went on. And so one Sunday morning, the pastor came out with a plumb line and said, does what this church believe line up with this plumb line? And everybody said no. So they said, well, we're leaving that denomination. And they became non-denominational for a long time. But they got the plumb line out because of this passage and seeing if the wall's still straight. Now he's standing on the wall to inspect it. How's the covenant going? Not great. Not great. Remember, there's only 613 laws, so that should be a cinch to follow all of those, right? And if you violate one, it's the same as violating them all, but you guys are violating the most important one. There's no God beside me. You violated the Shema. You violated the fact that I'm God and there's none beside me. You violated the fact that I'm a jealous God. And if you make statues, and if you bow down to them, and if you serve them, you're in judgment. So, we're standing on the wall. How's the covenant going? Not that great. Has it been violated? Yes. It's been violated big time. Is the wall still vertical? No. And I'm going to show you in the midst of the people. This isn't going to be secret. This isn't going to be some secret judgment. It's going to be in the midst of the people. There's many people with prophetic gifts now that are saying, in the next month or so, some big judgment things are going to happen. And everybody in the world is going to be stunned. You know, judgments, you know, there can be a personal judgment against a person that nobody else knows about, because if God personally judges somebody, nobody else is going to know about it. But I'm going to do this in the midst of all the people. In fact, the people in this kingdom, their lives are going to be radically changed, and not for the better. Not for the better. So he's considering what to do. Time has passed to overlook. I'm not going to pass by anymore. I'm not going to walk by the wall and say, oh, gee, look at that. The wall's starting to bow over here. Oh, look at that. It's leaning. Oh, look at that. Some of the bricks have fallen out. Not going to overlook it anymore. The time to overlook things has passed. When the plumb line's dropped, it's going to determine where the wall's crooked. And everybody's going to see it. If you see a wall and you got 3-4 bricklayers, however many, and you got a guy who goes to the top and drops the plumb line, the other guys go, oh, man, we're going to have to take this wall down. It's pretty hard to fix a block or a brick wall. So he says, the time's passed. Now we're going to see where's the wall crooked. It's going to be shown. And it's going to be in the midst of the people. Everybody's going to see it. And the plumb line is the standard. I got something to measure it with. When the southern kingdom is destroyed, he shows Jeremiah and Ezekiel what's happening. He shows Ezekiel, the priests are worshiping idols in the temple. Inside the temple, they're worshiping idols. So they're doing the ritual, you know, according to the Torah, and then they're, you know, going into a different room and worshiping an idol. God says, you know what? They've been doing this for a while, but it's going to stop tomorrow when the Babylonians get here. Because I'm going to use the Babylonians to destroy all my stuff. I'm going to use the Assyrians to destroy all my stuff. I'm going to use Arab terrorists to hit New York City, because the only thing America understands is money. New York is the financial capital of the world. And that's what got hit. The Pentagon got hit. You know, an hour later. We're a great military power. Pentagon got hit. It's the start of the judgment. So they're going to see where their errors are, and the time is here. And I'm afraid the wall's going to have to be knocked down, because I'm going to leave desolation here. Even the places of Isaac, the good stuff's going to be destroyed. You notice he mentions Isaac and not Jacob. That's kind of interesting. So he says the sanctuaries are going to be taken down. The leadership's going to be judged. And the people are going to see the sins of the leaders and the church, so to speak. It wasn't a church, obviously, but the religious leaders. The religious leaders tell Amos, you get out of here. We don't want you here. You're a party pooper. We got all the cool stuff here. We got kings. We got our own temples. You mind your own, go back to Judah and mind your own business, Amos, you twerp. We'll see that line later. They tell Amos to get out. Like, we don't want to hear you. When Jeremiah preaches in the southern kingdom, they say, Jeremiah, who do you think you are? We got priests over here. We got religious leaders over here that know the scriptures, and they do the stuff. Who do you think you are? Well, guess what? All this is going to be destroyed. No, it's not. God's not going to destroy his own house. If you don't shut up, Jeremiah, we're going to kill you. Jeremiah stays in Jerusalem after the during the exile. You know, he writes Lamentations. You know, I think Lamentations only, what, four chapters? But you read it for your homework. It's about Jeremiah being in the totally ruined city, saying, wow, this was a beautiful city. We had all this beautiful stuff. We had all these people. Now all the people are gone. All the buildings are destroyed. The temple's gone. I mean, it's really a sad book. That's why it's called Lamentations. That's why Jeremiah is called the wailing prophet. So people are going to see all these sins. So that was then, 722 B.C., the plumb line. The southern kingdom just gets the almond branch and the boiling pot. We'll do that maybe next week or the following week. So that was then. What about now? Is there any reason for judgment to come now? Does God have a plumb line somewhere that's he's dropping and saying, let's see what's going on down there in Parma. Let's see what's going on down there in any city you want to name. What was the commitment that the people of the north had? They had the Torah. They had the prophets up to that point. They had the book of the Judges. They had the Psalms. They had all the books that Solomon had written. And they made idols. So what was the commitment? Bad. What's our commitment? Eh, you know, 57 minutes on Sunday morning. Most of the time. I'm not saying every Sunday, but most of the time. And God's going to be so impressed when I do show up that he's going to say, wow, he came again. He was here 2 weeks ago and he's already back. That's amazing. That's amazing. He's looking for surrender. He's not looking for showing up. He's not looking for fans. He's not looking for people to like him better. He's looking for commitment and surrender. How surrendered is the church? Oh, we don't want to hurt anybody's feelings, and we want everything to be nice. We got nice, comfortable chairs. And, you know, we're children of God. Everybody's a child of God. He's not going to do anything to us. You know, we're all walking around being saved, and, you know, I'm saved. We're getting more comfortable chairs. We got a nicer carpet. The air conditioning's working better than it did last year. That's raining today. I'm not going to go. I was using the plumb line yesterday. My arm's kind of sore, so I think I'm going to stay home. Are we supposed to be on a journey to be more like Christ? Are we supposed to be transforming our lives? Are we supposed to be sanctified as we go? We're not justified as we go. We're already justified by him. But are we supposed to have a journey where in 9.5 seconds it's over? And when I was 15, I went down the front, I said the prayer, I signed the card. And now that I'm, you know, 70, 80, 100, whatever, hey, everything's been cool since then. I haven't done anything, but everything's been cool. Doesn't Paul write about how we're to be more and more like Christ? We're supposed to have the mind of Christ. We're supposed to be transformed. The Father wants us to be more and more like the Son. Don't hear that much anymore. We're made in his image, but we need to be conformed to his likeness. You know, like we said before, when God creates Adam, he talks to himself and says, let us make man in our image. He doesn't speak to the ground and say, Adam, come out of the clay. He says, let us make man in our image. We're made in his image, but any barbarian who's ever lived, right, had the image of God inside of them. Hitler had the image of God inside of him. Attila the Hun had, you know, the image of God inside of him because they weren't conformed to his likeness. You know, Hitler grew up in a Catholic church, was an altar boy. You imagine? Joseph Stalin was in the Orthodox seminary in Georgia. He was in the seminary. And then, you know, he became an atheist, and when he was at the height of his power, he went back to visit his old mother who was still alive. And he said to his mother, you know, I have more power than the czars had. And his mother said, I would rather you become a priest. I'm not impressed with your power. It's too bad you didn't stay in the seminary. Conform to his likeness. The goal of our life is not happiness. The goal is holiness. The goal is evangelization and holiness and witnessing and charitable works. And I used to get nervous in the office when somebody would say, you know, somebody who was 70 years old would say, oh, yeah, you know, when I was 13, I got saved and signed the thing and the guy said the prayer. And I say, wow, that's cool. So what have you been doing? Well, nothing. I think, oh, what do you mean nothing? The Christian life is a marathon run, isn't it? It's not a 100-yard dash. So the goal is not happiness, it's holiness. You give up the rights to your life. Remember the parable where Jesus talks about when a slave comes in from working all day in the field, the master of the house doesn't say, oh, what's your name, slave? What? Sit down. I'm going to make you something to eat. You've been working hard all day. No, the master says, okay, now make me my dinner, get me my dinner, and then after I eat, you can eat. Because we're servants. Paul calls us doulos in the Greek, which is a little more than a slave, but a lot less than a servant who gets paid. So he's basically a slave. He says, I'm a doulos. I'm a slave of Christ. He always identifies himself as a doulos. He'll do whatever. Beat me with rods, throw stones at me, shipwreck me in the thing, beat me up. I don't care. It's not my life anymore. The old me was crucified. It's now Christ who lives in me. So we give up rights to our life. Do we know God as our Father? Do we know him as Abba? Or do we just take him for granted and say, eh, here we go again. I heard this stuff already. I already read that chapter. I did one of those 1 year through the Bible 8 years ago, and I think I read that. I have time to read the Bible because I'm like a really important person. I'm really busy, and I'm with it. Or I got to take my kids. I got to go to the thing, you know. I don't know if y'all know who Tony Evans is. Oak Cliff Bible Fellowship in Dallas. He did this great talk I heard one day. He's a big Cowboys fan. And for a while, he was chaplain of the Cowboys. I don't know if he still is. But he did the example of, you know, somebody gets up early on Sunday morning, drives 45 minutes down to the stadium, parks the car, does the tailgating, you know, drinking beer, cooking food. Then at some point, the gates open to the stadium. So he and his friends go into the stadium, and they buy some more beer, and they buy some more food, and they go sit in their seat, and they wait for the game to start. Then the game starts, and it goes on for 3 hours. Then when the game's over, man, let's stop and get a beer and do something, and they stop someplace. Then they drive home, and, you know, by the time they get home, it's like 8 p.m. They put the TV on so they can hear a commentary about the game they were just at. So they invest from like 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. on a football game. But they won't go to church for an hour. The commitment is, I'll go to the game. I'll go to my kid's softball game all day. I'll go to the whatever it is. But I'm not going to go to church for an hour. I don't have time. So do we know him as a loving father who's the lover of our souls? If you ever study the Song of Songs and the great Paul Wilbur song, you know, Dance With Me, it says he's the lover of our souls. In the Song of Songs, it says he's happy if we just glance at him once in a while. He wants us to keep looking at him. But the American church uses it as kind of a sidelight. Yeah, Yeah, yeah. Also, we're all saved, so yeah, it's fine. Everybody's saved. Good. Or do we say, what's the least I need to do? Tell me, if I want to go to heaven, what's the least I need to do? I just want, like, the minimum requirement. I don't have time for all this. I don't have time for Bibles. I don't have time for prayers. I don't have time to hear some guy babbling on for 48 minutes. Just tell me what I have to do. Do I just say, Jesus, I want to follow you and I'm saved? I mean, can I just do that and get on with my life? Or, yeah, we're supposed to be disciples. We're supposed to be disciplined. We're supposed to be following. We're not supposed to be looking for the minimum. And after you come, you can't be the same. If you're the same after you've met Jesus, you know, have you really met him? If nobody can tell the difference, wait a minute, you're just the same as you were last time I saw you. What do you mean you got saved? I mean, you're still, you know, at the game drinking beer and cursing at everybody, and you're still doing, I can't tell any difference. Are we the same? Jesus lays this aside. He says, you shall love the Lord your God. Now think about it. You might consider it. Like when we read the prayer at the beginning, which is called the V'ahavta. God says, you will love the Lord your God. You have to love the Lord your God. Minimum requirement. Oh, but I love my children more. Well, nobody loves your children more than he does. Right? You think you love your children, but he loves them a lot more than you do. You can't love your children like he loves them. You can't love your spouse the way he loves your spouse. So Jesus says, you shall love. He's the king and he's the bridegroom. So if he's king, you have to submit and surrender. If he's the bridegroom, you want to have an intimate relationship with him. Oh, yeah, yeah. I did it when I was 15. That was 55 years ago. Wow, how much Bible have you studied? None. Do you go to church? Once in a while. What's your prayer life like? Well, I don't know. Once in a while I say, oh, Lord, don't let this happen. Or, let me have a good meeting today at my job. But other than that, what else am I supposed to do? Because the Holy Spirit shows you what you have to do. He shows you the standard. He shows you the wall. He shows you how the plumb line nicely delineates the wall. And he shows you salvation. Remember, Jesus says, you know, when the Spirit comes, when the Comforter comes, when the other Paraclete comes, he's going to remind you of everything I said. You're going to understand everything he told you. He says, when the Spirit comes, the other Paraclete, he's not going to talk about himself. He's going to talk about me. He's going to talk about me. He's going to show you truth. He's going to point to the cross and say, this is the plumb line. He's going to point to the cross and say, this is how you're saved. Not because you show up a couple times a month at your church. Not because once in a while you give a dollar to the homeless guy. Like once in a while you put, you know, a can of food in the Thanksgiving box. Those are great things to do. But that's not how you're saved. You're saved to do those things. I think it's in Titus and in Colossians. There's a couple of great verses I can't think of right now. About how, you know, if you love Jesus, you're going to do the stuff. You're going to say, yes, I want to help people for Thanksgiving. You don't say, well, if I help people for Thanksgiving, then he's going to like me better. So we see the standard. And the standard is you deny yourself and carry your cross. The prosperity preachers never quote that verse. Jesus says, if you want to follow me, you deny yourself. What do you mean deny myself? I want to make money and I want to have a nice house. And I want to have a really cool car. And I want people to say, wow, that guy's really awesome. And I want people at my job to say, man, that guy's amazing. He worked so hard. He did all this stuff. We're going to give him a big bonus. No, you deny yourself and you carry your cross. What's your cross? Who knows? Watchman Nee spent 20 years in solitary confinement in a Chinese prison. Paul got stoned, whipped, beaten with rods, shipwrecked, beheaded. Peter got crucified upside down. I bet that wasn't very pleasant. So, what do we have in American Christianity? Burger King Christianity. Remember the old Burger King commercial? Yeah. Yeah, you know what? I'll take some of this, and I don't want that. I'll take a little bit of this, and yeah, put that on the burger, but not this on the burger. And how long is it going to take? Because I don't have a lot of time. That's why I'm here at the drive-thru. I can't be waiting for this. I want it quick. And now nobody has any attention span, right? Nobody. So it's like, okay, give me the message. I need it in 12 minutes tops. I have time to study the Bible. Can I read like Cliff Notes? Can somebody just summarize this? We have Burger King Christianity. It's nice and comfortable, and we go and walk around acting saved. Yep, been to Burger King, like the nice chairs. And yes, saved. When I'm in heaven, here's what I'm going to do. And I'm not saying who's saved, who's not saved. But it's an attitude issue. So we're all comfortable. You know, and you can have one foot, oh, that's supposed to be in the world, not if the world, one foot in the world and one foot in the church. But the foot in the church might be, you know, 57 minutes a week. Might be less now with COVID. Might be 45 minutes a week. Might be an hour and 2 minutes. The other however many hours there are in a week, the rest of the time you're in the world. But it's okay because the air conditioner works. We have comfortable chairs. And the pastor is really good because he always tells me something uplifting. He always tells me something that makes me feel good. He tells me about, you know, nice things. Jeremiah, can you tell us something nice? The religious leaders say, Jeremiah, we want to hear nice things. Why are you talking about destruction? Why are you talking about judgment? Nobody wants to talk about sin and repentance. That's horrible. Sin, that makes people feel bad. Ugh. They're not going to come back next week. Ugh. Nobody wants to hear about crosses and blood. Who wants to talk about crosses and blood? Let's talk about something nice. We were talking about Leviticus earlier. Tim and I. You know, you read through Leviticus, you can't even believe it. It's gory and disgusting. But it shows you how horrible sin is. And it shows you that there's blood involved in atoning for your sin. And it shows you that there's death involved. And either somebody or something dies in your place, or you die. In contrast, the Burger King Christianity is in contrast with the people who want to walk with him, who walk with him, with the people who have surrendered. Well, this thing happened to me, but I know the Lord's in it, and you know, I'm going to praise him anyway, and I'm going to pray anyway, and I'm going to go to church anyway, because, you know, I've surrendered. He's the king. Almost any city you go to, seen so many of them, you can find a church called Christ the King. You know? Almost everywhere. All different denominations, and it's great. It's a great title. But do we have Christ as King over our country? Hardly. We're not even allowed to talk about him. Do we have Christ as King over our lives? Well, sometime. A little short amount of time during the week. Once in a while during the day, might even say a prayer for 15 or 20 seconds. I mean, if I'm not doing anything else. So the people who walk with him and have surrendered and go deeper, that's not Burger King Christianity. Because when you go deeper, you read the book. You want to know about him. You want to know, how did this happen? How am I so sinful and frail and condemned, and now I'm not condemned? How could this be? How could this be? You know, the song that says, I'll never know how much it cost to see my sins on the cross. We'll never know how much it cost. Oh, we have an idea, you know, you watch The Passion of the Christ, that's pretty rough. Now, you know, Jesus was a strong man, physically strong. You know, men in those days weren't wusses like most men now are. They were muscular. Everything was physical. You walked everywhere. You used your muscles for everything. They were strong people. And he went through that brutality. And remember, the soldiers were surprised he was already dead. The other guys were still alive. But they hadn't been brutalized like he was. If they did that, I don't know about you guys, but I'd probably live 10 minutes through that beating. Maybe. Let alone after that, then you're going to carry this heavy thing, and then you're going to get nailed, and then you're going to be there, can't breathe, and then you're going to be there trying to lean forward so you can breathe, and then you're going to suffocate. I'd probably be dead in 10 minutes. He lasted a while. Now, if you were going to be executed in the morning, if tomorrow morning you were going to be executed, even if whether it was lethal injection or hanging or electric chair, I don't think anybody uses any of those anymore, but I don't think anybody's been hung for 100 years, but I don't know. But if you were going to be executed in the morning, you would spend a pretty rough night, right? You'd be pacing around your jail cell. You'd be sweating like he was sweating. You'd be agitated. You wouldn't say, well, I better get a good night's sleep because I want to be well rested in the morning when they kill me. We can almost identify with that. And we can almost identify with being whipped. Almost. We can't really identify with being nailed to something, but you can almost kind of imagine it. So the physical brutality you can kind of think about, but what does it feel like to have all the sins of the world on you? Nobody will know what that feels like. Nobody. So we don't know the cost. So don't we want to go deeper and try to learn more about him, try to understand more about him, trying to understand how this whole plan of salvation unfolds from Genesis through Revelation? Yeah, I don't have time for that. I want Burger King. If I had time for that, I'd go to the nice restaurant. I won't go to Burger King. I don't have time for all that. So if you walk with him, you surrender and you go deeper, it's different than, hey, let's hear some really good music. We'll get a really good feeling about ourselves. We'll hear about how awesome we are. That's 21st century American church. Music's good. Message is comfortable. Hear how awesome you are. Make your plans for the rest of the week. I leave feeling good about myself. He died for more than 57 minutes in a church and $2 in the offering. Do you think Jesus would have ever told his followers, hey, if you think about me like, you know, an hour a week, and, you know, put a couple of bucks in the envelope, you know, put a couple of shekels in the envelope. I mean, I don't expect, hey, that's fine. You know, I don't want you to go through any trouble. I'm not putting any pressure on you guys. He died for more than that. You know, are you checking religious boxes? Oh, I did this, said the prayers, did the Bible study, went to church, dollar to the homeless guy, can of corn in the Thanksgiving thing. Yep, every year, check the box. Yep. Christmas, yep. Went to the Christmas Eve service. Yep, that was great. Church was decorated really nice. It was great. Or have we made a Christianity without Christ? The world's trying to make, not even a Christianity, but the world's trying to make kind of a human brotherhood without Christ. Everything's based on Adam, not the second Adam. Now, why doesn't communism work? Because our human nature doesn't want us to share stuff. You can't do it that way. You remember the book Animal Farm? Cute little book, you know, or what's his name? Blanking out his name. George Orwell, who wrote 1984, Animal Farm. It's this cute little book. It's a really short book, and it's about a farm, a barnyard, where the animals revolt and they overthrow the farmer and they take over the society. And so they're saying is all animals are equal and we don't do this. And then pretty soon there's a group of pigs that take over and they go, all animals are equal, but some are more equal than others. And then two of the pigs fight with each other. Who's going to be in control? So it's like, it's a satire or I don't know what you call it exactly, but that's how people are. So, you can't have a Christianity without Christ. He says, come and follow me. Come and follow me. This American kind of Christianity that we have is not found in the Bible. Nowhere does it say, be comfortable. Don't have any kind of stress. No pressure on anybody. We, I'm sure you all do, y'all do. We try to talk Christians into going to church, right? You always say to somebody, oh, how come you haven't been in church? Oh, you should come to our church. You should come to church. We try to talk Christians into going to church. In China, they prepare them to be martyred. In the Middle East, they prepare them to be martyred. They'll take your little kid and put him on a cross till he dies. Oh, I'm not going to go to church. It's raining again. It's cold. I don't want to get all wet. They're preparing to be martyred. The judgment is coming here. The church is going to be persecuted. The church is being persecuted. Most churches have surrendered to the world. They're not going to be persecuted anymore. Because the world loves that. But for the churches who don't surrender, for the remnant of people who don't surrender, there's going to be a tough life ahead. Because Jesus is going to shut down Burger King Christianity. He's going to take the plumb line out and say, where does it say in my word that you can have Burger King any way you like it? Where does it say in my word, don't go to the church if they don't have comfortable seats? Talk to Watchman Nee about that. He had one bench in his cell. They took all his books, took his Bible. He had nothing in the cell except a hole to relieve himself in. And a couple of times a day, they gave him a little bowl full of rice. And when he died, the only thing they found in his cell was this wooden bench, and he had carved into it, Jesus is Lord. That's all he had. We won't open our Bibles for 5 minutes. You probably have 8 Bibles in your house. One on your iPad, one on your phone, maybe 2 or 3 on your phone, couple on your iPad, 4 or 5 in the house. So the Spirit's going to guide us and going to show us. Jesus says, store up treasures for yourself in heaven, not on earth. Because the treasure you store there, nobody can steal it. The moths can't destroy it. It's not going to rot away. That's the message of the cross. And people need to hear that truth. You know, I always talk about, well, how do you evangelize young people? I don't know. You know, they don't know. Young people, I don't know. I don't know the key, but the Holy Spirit does. But we have to do something. Maybe there's young people that are actually looking for truth. Maybe there's people that are actually searching for something. They've been dumbed down. They've been indoctrinated in their schools. And maybe there's a lot of them that say, I don't know what's true, what's not true. You can show up with the message of the gospel, the message of the cross, instead of the church trying to be more and more like the world. So this is the standard. God is not going to pass it by anymore. Jesus is not coming back as the lamb. He's not coming back as the suffering servant. He's coming back as the Lion of Judah. And it's time to start getting ready. Then Amaziah said to Amos, go, you seer. Get out of here. We don't want to hear this. Flee to the land of Judah. There eat bread and there prophesy. But never prophesy again at Bethel. Get out of here. Somebody who's truly preaching the gospel, what does the world say? Get out of here. What do most churches say? You know, we used to do that. We don't do that anymore. God's changed his mind about that. Don't be so old-fashioned. Don't be a party pooper. Church after church. Read any... I don't even know how to describe it. Read any papers from any major denomination. Everything's falling. This is the great falling away. Everything is falling. The leaders are worried about, are people still going to like us? Are we still going to have our tax-exempt status? What if we hurt somebody's feelings? And they'll always say, Jesus never rejected anybody. Which is true. But he never left them the way they were. He never left them the way they were. Therefore, says the Lord, your wife shall be a harlot in the city. Your sons and daughters shall fall by the sword. Your land shall be divided by a survey line. You shall die in a defiled land. And Israel shall surely be led away captive from his own land. The judgment isn't, the economy may go down for a few months. Your 401k might go down for a year. The unemployment rate might go up by 1%. No, it's destruction is going to come. We're following the pattern. And if you want to read Jonathan Cahn's books, and I'm not promoting him, but they're very interesting. Harbinger 1, Harbinger 2. And the Oracle especially. I love the Oracle especially. And I'm not saying he's prophetically right about everything, but it's pretty interesting. So there is a plumb line that he's going to hold up. And he's going to see, is the wall still straight? And I don't think the American church is going to measure up. So thanks for listening.